Gilman and Company, 102.5, 106.3 The Game, streaming live on Twitter, Twitch, YouTube, and Facebook Live, live from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game National Studios on a Fireball Hot Take Friday. It is 5 o'clock on a Fireball Hot Take Friday, but first, you heard Nian's update. The Predators have signed UC Saros, reportedly, to an 8-year extension, which means 9 years, because this year counts, at $7.74 million. You heard Elliot Friedman say he thought it'd be $8.5 million, and Barry Trotz getting him to $7.74 million. The Pierre LeBrun article that came out earlier today says that the Predators could have interest in Steven Stamkos, whose agent told Pierre he is hitting the market. 40 goals last year, 33 years old, and supposedly, you know, they're wanting 5 years on an 8-year deal from Tampa. And it sounds like Tampa's offer is not good enough. And again, Pierre says that the Predators are in the mix for Steven Stamkos. Pierre also is reporting that the Predators, who have said that they're not interested previously in trading Yaroslav Askarov, are taking a bunch of calls, and they are trying to use him in order to get into the top five of tonight's draft. So there is a lot of drama. Before we get to Chad, though, I first want to say let's give away a pair of tickets to see Sarah McLachlan at Ascend Amphitheater this Saturday night. Be caller 5 at 615-737-1025, and you will win those. Chad Withrow joins us now from Outkick, presented by A Moment's Peace Salon and Day Spa. So, Chad, let's start there. UC Saros, 9 more years of UC Saros for the Predators. He's never won a playoff series. He's 5-11 in the playoffs. Are you nervous about that? What do you make of it?
Yeah, I mean, I think he's ultimately going to be judged by performing better in the playoffs. You don't sign someone for that period of time that you've seen this much within your organization without the understanding that this is going to be someone who could go win a cup for us. And that's why you make a move like that. So, I mean, I think all the pressure, look, they're going to be a team that's good enough to make the playoffs. It's all about putting yourself in position to get an advantageous playoff spot. But, I mean, much like Pekka, you know, he was judged for a lot of his career when the team was consistently making the playoffs by that end-of-the-season playoff performance. UC Saros will be no different. He's going to be judged by how he performs in the playoffs, whether that's good or bad.
So I get really frustrated because I feel like, you know, when it comes to Saros, he hasn't won a playoff series yet, but then every time people tell me, well, it's not his fault he didn't win this one, and it's not his fault he didn't win that one. And I'll give you the Carolina series a couple years ago, but, I mean, they did blow a 2-goal lead with under 2 minutes to go against Vancouver in Game 4 that pretty much, you know, axed them in that series. And I think about the goalie position in hockey, the pitcher position in baseball, and the quarterback position in the NFL. If I go to any of these websites and I pull up a pitcher's stats, I see win-loss. I pull up quarterback, I see win-loss. I pull up goalie, I see win-loss. I don't see that at any other position in any of these sports, which leads me to this question. How much do those positions actually dictate winning and losing, and how much do you accept, oh, it's not Dak Prescott's fault the Cowboys don't win?
I think it's however you want to frame your argument. So, you know, pitcher is a good example, right? You can have a great outing. You know, Chris Sale for the Braves continues to have great outings, and he, you know, he gets beat 1-0 by the Chicago White Sox, right? That's not necessarily his fault, but he didn't win the game. If you want to make excuses for UC Saros, I'm sure there's plenty of chances to do that and say, well, this was a soft, this was his defenseman letting him down. Okay, this one was a soft goal. Okay, this happened here. I think you can come up with anything depending on what argument you want to make. You know, the UC Saros playoff type deal, I know it's a longer period of time, but it's like Rick Barnes in basketball. Rick Barnes has reached a point where he's been so successful in the regular season that outsiders will only judge him by his NCAA tournament performance because that's where he struggled, right? They don't really care. It's kind of almost like a given that the team will be good in the regular season. How did you perform in March? Whether that's fair or not, that's the knock on Rick Barnes. That's how he is evaluated, is by his March performance and his team's March performance. I'm sure I could go back through the years and say, well, this bad thing happened and this matchup happened and this guy got hurt or this happened, but no one really cares.
Yeah.
I think you see Saros, look, he will get the win or the loss, especially now that the organization has shown this level of faith in him. That's going to go in his column as the goalie from here on out, especially when this team gets the playoffs. And back in the playoffs next year and they don't win the playoff series, it's going to get hot on UC Soros. And I think it's completely understandable.
So I have a theory with this, which is once you get paid, like Justin Herbert got $52 million a year. When he got that $52 million after they had lost that, you know, game where they blew it to Jacksonville in the second half, I said, look, we can blame Brandon Staley for that, but now that you're making $52 million, if it happens next year, it's your fault. And that's how I feel about Soros, which is if you're going to make 7¾ and you're going to be signed for the next 9 years and you can't get me out of the playoffs, out of the first round, I'm going to start looking at you and saying it's your fault. And I think that that should be allowed.
Yeah, and Justin Herbert is a great example because throughout his career, he gets the benefit of the doubt so far because of Brandon Staley, because of the receivers, because of the defense, whatever it is. That starts to go away the longer that you are around and you don't perform at a high level in the postseason. It becomes less about the supporting cast and more about you. And I think you're right, especially after you get paid the big bucks and get the big contract and your organization shows that faith in you, then it becomes about the player.
Chad Withrow is with us from Outkick, presented by A Moment's Peace Salon and Day Spa. So the Predators have been rumored in some of these big names, Steven Stamkos and some of these defensemen and things like that. And so I have a theory they're going to sign three big names, including Stamkos, who, while he's a little bit older, is still, you know, probably like DeAndre Hopkins, you know, still probably at that level. They had a good season last year. They just signed the goalie. People started, when they had that win streak, people started to get on board again. And there was a sneaky little story. I don't know if you saw this in the Tennessean, but Alex Doherty put this out there last week, that if Bally Sports gets, you know, trashed, as it should, in the bankruptcy court, the Predators may go to a free over-the-air channel. Again, that's Alex Doherty's reporting. They may go to a free over-the-air channel. Do you think if they can sign some big names in free agency this week and they get moved off of Bally Sports, that the buzz can start to get back to where it was before it started to erode kind of at the end of the David Boyle years?
When you say free over-the-air channel, are you talking about like working out a deal with like a network? Or I'm confused what you mean by that.
Okay, so we all know about, like, you know, Channel 2, 4, 5, you know, those.
Like the UPN, like where
yes.
Live Golf is on.
Yes.
They could theoretically have, okay, I got what you're saying now. They could have Preds games on. I'll say this about Steven Stamkos. I know who he is. I listen to your show, Jared, and half the names you throw out there that are big names in hockey, I've never heard of them.
Sure.
And I'm a very casual hockey fan, right? So I am no expert on this. Steven Stamkos, I know exactly who that guy is. That's a big market draw. I remember starting out working in radio, and Paul Kariya and Peter Forsberg, you know, come to the Preds, and it was a huge deal because, once again, those were names that everyone knew if you were a sports fan, not necessarily a hockey fan. You knew those names. So that was a giant deal when that happened for the market. Steven Stamkos would be huge. Now, what would an over-the-air, free over-the-air channel do for the Preds? That's interesting. I'm not exactly sure what that would do to add interest, but I don't think it would hurt.
Well, I think Bally Sports is just, I mean, you have DirecTV, don't you?
Yes.
So you are saved for the moment, unlike most of us. I mean, I don't think Bally Sports can reach 90%. With them not being on Comcast, I don't think it gets to 90% of the people in this city. That's a problem.
It's a huge problem. And the blackouts and everything, I mean, it's just, it's a big issue. And that regional sports network thing, I mean, that's, it's all but dead.
It was stealing money for so many years, and we just didn't really think about it. But, like, my grandmother in Florida has paid, we totaled this up. You know, she's lived in Florida for, like, the last 30 years. And at, like, $11 a month, she spent, like, $30,000 of her own money to watch the Miami Heat, the Miami Marlins, and the Florida Panthers, and she's probably never watched a game. And
yeah,
so,
on what, Sun Sports or whatever it is down in Florida that always had those teams?
And so it's like, I mean, just it was such a racket, and now everyone's like, I don't want to pay for these channels. Most of the people don't want to watch regular season sports. Most of the people rather do other things. And so, well, I shouldn't say that. They don't want to pay extra to watch regular season sports. I mean, this is going to be kind of a disaster. I mean, it's crazy that the teams and the leagues are like, even though they're getting paid the rights fees, they're like, no, 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 we don't want the rights fees money. We just want to be on TV for people to watch us.
Yeah, the Phoenix Suns, I think, struck a deal similar to that, where they went on over-the-air TV for free when all that stuff was falling apart. So it's a brave new world. This NFL lawsuit with Sunday Ticket has been interesting to follow. I think the result of all these things is going to be better for the fan. This would be better for the Predators fan if this were to happen. That NFL lawsuit will lead to more choice and cheaper prices for that product. I really think that in the end, it's all going to benefit the fan most. But we're in a brave new world where people have options and they want a la carte. They want to pay and know exactly what they're getting when they pay for a streaming service or pay for a team's games or whatever it is. And I think the whole market is going to get more selective for that reason. And you're not going to have issues like your grandmother paying for Florida Panthers games, which never watches them.
Chad Withrow is with us from Outkick, presented by Moments Peace Salon and Day Spa. Coming up next, the hot seat. And I got some hot seat questions. We'll do that next. Stillman & Company, 102.5, 106.3 again. Stillman & Company, Fireball, Hot Take Friday. Chad Withrow with us, presented by a Moments Peace Salon and Day Spa. And again, by the way, our NHL draft coverage and show and party live from Draft Picks at Fordyce Center Bellevue coming on, Ian, I believe, right after us. Max will have it.
Yep.
There you go. And the report is the Predators trying to trade into the top five of the draft. Chad Withrow is with us. Chad, are you ready for the hot seat?
I was born ready.
Number one, what did you think of the big TV ratings for the NHL's Game 7 of the Stanley Cup Final and the Tennessee A&M College World Series Final, even though they were played on the same night?
I saw the rating in the NHL. So the Tennessee A&M game had a good number, too?
The Tennessee A&M game had I think it was like 3.2, and last year 3.2 million, and last year it was 3.5 million without a Game 7 of the Cup Final going on at that time.
So, ultimately it all goes to the same place, right? It's all going to the same piggy bank with Disney on ABC and ESPN, even if they go head-to-head against each other. I do not, and I heard you talking some about this, I do not understand why you wouldn't want to space that out a little bit better, right? I think they had the NBA draft starting Wednesday night. So if you had one on Monday, one on Tuesday, that would have been ideal. I know these schedules are done way in advance, so you can't really plan it out that way. I'm sure, you know, ESPN's like, hey, if it would have been over, if A&M didn't lose that 1-0 lead in the seventh on Sunday, you would have had a Sunday afternoon national champion and not had to worry about Monday. But I don't understand why you don't space it out. I'll say this, too. I don't know why ESPN wanted to go 2 days for the NBA draft and separate the rounds to only put it at 3 o'clock in the afternoon.
Yeah, I thought the whole thing was stupid.
Ronnie James is drafted.
I thought that whole thing was stupid, honestly. I mean, I don't know. I don't even care about the NBA anymore. I think the NBA sucks.
Yeah, I didn't watch any of the draft. I was following where Dalton Connect went. That's about it. But, I mean, I don't – again, if you're going to do it, like, just do it all in one night. I don't understand the decision to – we're going to draw this thing out for television and put it at 3 p.m. the next day and not put it in primetime for the second round, especially in a year where you're going to have Bronny James drafted, because that's the most important second-round pick or the most talked about that we may ever have.
Unbelievable. Number two, what does the NFL's defeat and subsequent $14 billion judgment over NFL Sunday Ticket mean to you?
It means the fan's going to win. The biggest takeaway for me with that was Robert Kraft, when he was deposed, you know, you got Roger Goodell and the NFL exec saying, we're all about the fan. We're all in on the fan. This is the best product for the fan. We offer them more options than anyone else. And then Robert Kraft was deposed about it. He said, oh, no, this was always a premium product, talking about Sunday Ticket. We priced it as a premium product. They were trying to price some out. So it wasn't about the fan. And I think that conflicting thing, that what Roger Goodell says versus the honesty that Robert Kraft showed, has been a problem with the NFL. They are about the money. Every league is about the money. But don't tell me that you're about the fan when ultimately you're about making the most money, and that's it. So I didn't really like that. But I think, Jared, like I said before, this is just going to end up in a win for the fans. I think this is going to open up more competition, lower prices for Sunday Ticket product. And I think it's going to lead the market to drive it forward where it's going to be in a better spot for the fan, which is what I'm most concerned about.
Number three, what was your reaction to Tennessee's national title in baseball?
I was way more excited than I thought. Now, all those Vandy fans who are excited about that baseball national title, I kind of get it when they won one.
Yeah, hey, I will say this. You did crap on them for a long time about that, as did I. But you did really crap on them for a long time about celebrating their baseball titles.
I think the first one I probably crapped on a little bit. But I did come around and say, look, if you love this, like, I'm not telling anybody not to love it, you know, and not to get excited about it. Like, that's great. Like, I would be excited about a national championship, too. I was just telling them why I don't like college baseball and how it is a niche sport. Now, it has gotten more popular. And college baseball fans hate for me to say this. That Tennessee 2022 team got a lot of talk about them. And we've seen big growth in 2022, 2023, 2024 in college baseball interest. And I think Tennessee playing the villain that year. And this team wasn't quite the villain, unless you ask Greg McElroy, who thinks Tony Vitello is, you know, a villain.
Did you hear his apology, by the way?
Yeah, that was forced. We can talk about that, but I am almost 100% sure that someone at ESPN that employs him to call SEC games told him to ease up.
I couldn't believe that. I was like, dude, like, own it. Like, I mean, I don't share the opinion,
yes.
But
hey,
just
Trevor Maddich. Did Trevor Maddich apologize when he came on? Like,
no.
I thought he shouldn't have. I thought it was a ridiculous take, especially for someone that played for Nick Saban that we've seen berate reporters and disrespect them, or Kirby Smart, you know, who says everything in the book to his team constantly. Like, I don't really care about that stuff. I thought it was a ridiculous take, but own it. I'm with you. There was no need to apologize. I didn't want an apology from him. That whole thing was weird. But no, going back to Tennessee, I was very excited. I got very much into this team, watching them in the tournament, watching those games. And it was exciting for a program. Look, I'm not like Florida fans. I'm not going to go count every swimming and diving national championship that's won and talk about how, you know, we dominate everything because we dominate the Olympic sports. Tennessee hasn't won a national championship in my book since 2008. With women's basketball. Women's basketball and college baseball are very similar in national popularity. Women's basketball probably a little bit bigger now because of Caitlin Clark. But for years, women's basketball may have had the advantage, but it was very similar in audience. And I remember watching those Candace Parker teams win a title. So it's been that long. It was cool to witness, and it's been really cool to see. Tony Vitello, they've been the best college baseball program over the last 4 years, and it culminates with that national championship. And it's just, it's incredible to see the rise because, again, and I don't want to make this, you know, anger Vandy fans when I say this as a compliment. I did not think it was humanly possible to catch Tim Corbin and Vandy the way Tennessee did in this state. Because I didn't think Tennessee fans would care enough about baseball. But sure enough, they started winning and fans care.
Which takes me to our next one. Do you think Tim Corbin has a comeback act?
I think he does because he's kind of racking up in the transfer portal, right, more than he ever has before.
And on the coaching staff. I mean, he went and took Dayton's head coach to be the hitting coach.
I also think that when Tony Vitello had that rant after they beat Evansville and he said that thing about don't even come on a visit here if you're just trying to get top dollar, if that's all you're about, that was in response to a dude that was supposed to visit Tennessee and didn't because he committed to Vandy during that game. So I'll say it this way. If Tony Vitello is worried about Tim Corbin paying top dollar for transfers, that's a good thing for Tim Corbin, right? Mm-hmm. That shows me that he's probably turned a corner and that Vandy and their NIL, they are getting serious about it and they are paying for recruits the way everyone else does. You know, I'm not this is a good thing for Vandy, is what I'm saying. So if it even got under Vitello's skin a little bit, and I know both those guys get under the other's skin, then I think that's probably a good thing for Vandy. I think he does have – he's got another act coming, and it's not going to be all bad. It's just going to be – I'll say what I said about Corbin and Vandy back in the day, though. It's going to be really hard to catch Tennessee right now. Number one recruiting class in the country coming in, defending national champions. It's a tough conference, and it'll humble you at some point, and that's going to happen to Tony V in Tennessee, but it's difficult to imagine that happening anytime soon.
Last baseball one for you. Your thoughts on Jim Schlossnagel's exit from A&M and approach to Texas?
Biggest betrayal that I can imagine. By the way, Greg McElroy should be crushing Jim Schlossnagel for going after a young reporter for asking that question, knowing he was going to leave.
That was the guy who was classless. Totally ridiculous. Was Schlossnagel telling the reporter that he was selfish when the reporter was doing his job and was right?
Yeah, we had Richard Zane as a reporter. We had him on, and he was very honest about it. He's like, look, I went to A&M. I love this place. I grew up around here. He's like, it hurt to see the fans' reaction to it. I mean, he got drugged by A&M fans. And then when he left, they were all apologizing to the reporter for asking it at that point. So there's no good way to leave your university. There's especially no good way to leave your university when you're going to your arch rival less than a day after losing in the national championship game to go coach somewhere else. I mean, it's just, I can't imagine a bigger betrayal from a coaching standpoint. Patino's the one example, but Patino went to the NBA, failed, and then his best offer was Louisville.
Well,
when he came back. It would be like Patino leaving Kentucky after
Tuberville.
Losing. Tuberville, but that wasn't to a rival, right? You're talking about when he left in the middle of dinner or whatever?
When he said that they'd have to carry me out of a pine box to leave the Grove, and then he went to Auburn the next day?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, well, he did it twice. Remember when he was at, was it Texas Tech or Cincinnati?
It was Texas Tech. He went to Cincinnati. He was at dinner with recruits.
He got up at dinner. He was eating with a recruit and left and didn't give any explanation and went and took the job. I mean, there are bad ways to exit a job. I'm talking about just utter betrayal of a fan base and everyone around. The only thing close would be if Rick Pitino, after losing to Arizona in 1997 at Kentucky, would have taken the Louisville job the next day.
Yeah.
Instead, there was a gap in between him at Kentucky and Louisville. That was seen as betrayal to Kentucky fans, but it's not nearly the same. Just imagine the timing of that, of any big-time rival. I mean, Texas A&M is Ohio State, Michigan to those people.
Well, I will give you one. Bill Belichick with the napkin, I resign as head coach of NYJ to go to the Patriots.
Yeah, that's a good one. I still think, even in the NFL, it's tough to find. I know the way A&M feels about Texas, and I know the way everyone in that state feels about the University of Texas, and I just cannot imagine a bigger emotional. Now, if it happened in football, it would have been bigger, but talking to some people at TexAgs.com, they say, you know, baseball is the second most popular sport at A&M behind football, so it's a big deal. And it's a huge betrayal to those Aggie fans.
With the Lakers hiring LeBron's podcast buddy J.J. Redick to be the coach and drafting his son in the second round yesterday, has some of the prestige of the Lakers worn off?
Yes. They announced themselves yesterday as not a serious franchise. They did it with J.J. Redick, and now they've done it by drafting Bronny James. And it's... Look, say what you want about Jerry Buss. You know, he had some issues also. Dude was a hell of a sports owner. He did a heck of a job with that Lakers organization, and his daughter has not done well at all.
No.
Since she took over. So I'm looking at her, and Jeannie Buss needs to figure it out and stop making minor league moves. They just hired a guy from media. I mean, this would be like, I'm trying to think of the equivalent, Deion Sanders, Trent Dilfer, except Deion Sanders and Trent Dilfer went to Jackson State and UAB. And Trent Dilfer had coached at a high level in high school. Now imagine one of those guys getting the Green Bay Packers job as their first job. That's what the Lakers just did with J.J. Redick. And I like J.J. Redick. He's a smart guy. He looks good on television. He speaks well. Maybe it will work out for them. They're saying that he's got some similarities to Pat Riley when he started out. Well, great. Maybe that's the case. But if you're going to answer to LeBron James, a 40-year-old aging superstar, on everything, you're going to continue to fail. And until they decide to get serious, it's going to be more first-round playoff exits for the Lakers.
Last one for you on the hot seat. Do you believe that college baseball is on the come up or it's just here locally?
I think it's probably on the rise. I think it's a major part of that, though, Jared, is the fact that in the South, it's just so dominant. I mean, this region just so utterly dominates that sport. You saw it in the College World Series. You know, half were ACC teams, half were SEC teams. So I'm probably a little bit blinded in that I live inside the forest and I'm not seeing the trees because I'm in the middle of it. But I do think that it is, it's a product that's getting better, and I think more people are paying attention. But I'll also admit that it's hard for me to have a lot of perspective on it, because I don't think anybody cares about college baseball in New England or in the Northeast. I don't even know how much people care on the West Coast about college baseball. I know they care in the Southwest, they care in Texas, they care in the Southeast. But outside of that, is it really growing nationally? I don't know. It's kind of gone from niche sport to just dominant regional sport with a lot of interest here. So I'm not sure if it's plateaued or not nationally.
Chad Withrow, presented by A Moment's Peace Salon and Day Spa, on the hot seat. Chad, great stuff. We will talk soon.
All right, have a great weekend. We'll talk to you next week.
Yep, Chad Withrow from OutKick joining us on the program. Okay, there is a report that the Predators are trying to trade into the top five of the draft. And I'm not exactly sure how it makes me feel. We'll get to that coming up next here on our program, 615-737-1025. First, let me tell you about Twice Daily. That's right. I absolutely love Twice Daily. In fact, as I pulled up kind of the idea to talk about Twice Daily, I was like, you know what? A little made-to-order pizza from the Twice Daily kiosk does sound pretty good. Twice Daily has your cravings, and you can save on every visit. Stop in and get rewarded, and all you need to do is join the Twice Daily Rewards Program to unlock special discount savings, enter their sweepstakes, and so much more. Celebrate summer with the Chicken Salad Summer at Twice Daily. They've made two new additions to their menu, their Flaky Chicken Salad Croissant and their Tasty Chicken Salad Wrap. Plus, they're made fresh in-house and made to order just the way you like it. And since it's summer, don't forget to grab an ice-cold drink, too. You can download the Twice Daily app to order ahead or available now through their made-to-order kiosk, Twice Daily. What are you craving? Given the season that you guys had and the success that you had, has that changed the draft philosophy at all, or are you guys looking upside, upside, upside?
Well, I think we always want to look upside, but we're looking for unique skill sets. I mean, you can't have everybody having the same skill sets, or you just won't have what you need to win in the playoffs. So you want to create some different skill sets. So where we're drafting right now, I mean, obviously Celebrini is the cream of the crop. There's some high-end defensemen probably, and there's probably four or five that are sort of in that next level. I don't think it's a particularly deep draft when it comes to those high-end guys like last year, especially in the, you know, probably the first 8 or 10 picks. This year it's probably a little shorter, but there's some good players. And I've done some research, and we dug into it with our scouts. No matter what you think of the draft, there is always what I call a core player. There's core players sprinkled end of the first and into the second almost in every draft. We're talking about the Braden Points and the Sebastian Ajos and people like that.
That was Barry Trotz on our program on Monday. And Ian, now it's fascinating, given the Pierre LeBrun report, that the Predators have been taking calls on Yaroslav Askarov. Remember, Barry Trotz knew he was getting the deal done when he told Alex Doherty yesterday he wasn't going to trade either goalie. And now Pierre is saying that the Predators have received numerous calls on Yaroslav Askarov in the last 24 hours in the wake of the UC Saros extension. The Preds are willing to move Askarov, but have set a high price they feel is warranted. Nashville would like to move in the top five of the first round tonight via an Askarov trade. So far, there hasn't been a fit, but the Preds will keep talking to teams.
Wonder what a high asking price is.
First of all, I think we have to assume that probably came from Barry Trotz directly, right?
The high asking price?
No, just the whole report.
Oh. Okay.
You know, that Pierre saying numerous teams have called the Predators?
Sure.
Who could tell Pierre that he could actually report that on? The Predators. Unless every team that called the Predators called Pierre and said, we've called the Predators about Askarov. And then Barry saying, you know, hey, I'm willing to, they're willing to move him. Well, nobody else can say that except Barry. And they want to get into the top five, but they haven't found a fit. I think that's the bat signal to, hey, if you're picking in the top five, and you want a young goalie and the 22nd pick or something like that, call us.
Maybe one of those teams in more of a rebuild long-term situation will be interested in that.
Perhaps.
As opposed to a win-now team.
Perhaps. And again, it was fascinating that in that cut, and again, I didn't really think about it at the time, but Barry talked about how Celebrini's going to go number one and then forget about it. But then he's like, and then they got those defensemen up there that they could be, And it's like, oh, now I know why Barry's studying the top of the draft so hard, because he's trying to get up to the draft. So I actually think this just popped into my head. And I'm not committing to this opinion. It's a theory that I'm not committing to having. Am I allowed to do that?
I don't know.
It feels like if it comes out of my mouth as a theory, that I am endorsing that theory, that I am saying this is what happened. But I'm not saying that here. I think Barry probably used Askarov in order to get a better deal from Soros. The Elliott deals, the Elliott cut that we had that played earlier today, said that he thought Soros would come in around 8.5, which is where Connor Hellebuck sits, and that Elliott was told, Soros told his people, get the deal done. And so it got done for about 800 grand less than everybody thought it was going to get done, which is not nothing. And I almost wonder if Barry Trotz didn't say, hey, I got the young guy over here I can go to if you don't want to sign my deal. But I wonder if Soros sat there and said, I don't want them to get any ideas about the young guy. Get the deal done. And so they got the deal done. And then Barry, in order to get the deal done, told the Tennessean, I'm not trading either guy. So then Soros still has to kind of look over his shoulder thinking like, okay, well, I need to sign this deal and, you know, and then see where they can go from that, from there. And Barry had already had thoughts about these top five players, thinking, okay, once we get the Soros deal done, then I'm going to use Askarov to try to get up into the top five. Just a thought. I'm not saying that's what he did. If he did, that is a mastermind right there, but I could see it. But here's actually kind of my thought on the draft and everything else. The NHL draft, for the most part, does not move the needle for me. And I don't think that it moves the needle for many of you. I'm not really planning on watching the draft tonight, but if the Predators end up trading into the top five, I will. Last year was a little bit of a different story because the draft was in Nashville and the Predators had two first-round picks and a high first-round pick. I think they picked like a 12th or something last year. But if you remember, all of the chatter leading up to the first round of last year was about the Predators trying to trade into the top four, and Barry Trotz offered three first-round picks in Yaroslav Askarov to the San Jose Sharks to try to move to number four, and they said no. So there was all this talk about what they'd be willing to include in the deal and what they wanted in return, and would the guy that they get be good enough in order to do it. And so all that was kind of the chatter. So that was at least kind of fascinating. For the most part, the NHL draft doesn't really do it for me because, unlike the NFL draft, we don't know anything about these guys. I can't even pronounce these guys' names. So it's like the Predators are picking 22nd. They're going to pick some 18-year-old from Nova Scotia whose rights they won't even control next year, or who won't even be in the Predators organization next year. They'll be telling us, hey, this guy will be ready in 4 or 5 years. Then in 4 or 5 years, like Philip Tomasino, he might stink. It's just kind of like, you know, it's just this total crapshoot after like the third pick. That's kind of how I feel about the NHL draft. And I don't know any of these kids. It's not like basketball or football where we watched them play. So it normally just doesn't do anything for me. But if the Predators are going to trade into the top five of the draft, now we got some tea. Like, now I'm in. But that's the only way that I get excited about the NHL draft. Free agency? Yeah, I'm in on free agency. The draft? And again, I just think it's the fact that, like, we're not doing the studying and the scouting and the, you know, we just don't care enough. Like, and we shouldn't care enough. I mean, how are we going to watch these world junior players play 17-year-old? I'm not doing that. I've got other things. We got football season. We got hockey season. We got grown-up stuff to worry about around here. But I am now, like, I'm sitting here thinking, man, if they trade into the top five, then we got some juice. And then once they draft that guy, like, as much as we don't care about the young prospects, like, who really cares about Tanner Mullendyke right now? Who really cares about Matthew Wood? Or if they end up trading into the top five, then we'll look at the player that they pick and we'll be like, that is the future of the Predators. So that'll be kind of exciting. But I really today, I mean, I really thought about the draft and I was like, nah, we'll see. We'll see if these guys are any good 4 years from now, 5 years from now. The way we're seeing with Tomasino and Afanasyev, and it's like, all those guys kind of suck. That's where we'll be in 5 years. But if you trade a five, now it's like, okay, now we got something to get excited about around here. So we shall see. I will say this for the record. I don't think they're going to pull off a trade into the top five. I just don't see it happening. 615-737-1025. We're back to your phones. And I believe by the time we hit the air on Monday, free agency will have opened up. So I've got my free agent big board in front of me. The guys I want on the Predators. We'll do that next. Stillman and Company, 1025, 106.3 The Game.
Tampa Bay, I guess Steven Stamkos is potentially on the move. Is that real?
Yes, that is real. The GM, Julien Brisebois, met with reporters this morning. He said, we have not been able to make a deal, and I'm not sure if we can. Don Meehan, the agent, said today that it appears as if he's headed to free agency on July 1st. Couple of things here. Number one, I remember a couple of years ago, Evgeny Malkin, they said free agent. The next day he got a deal done. So I am always careful. You should always make sure this doesn't do a quick swerve or something like that. But I think the challenge here with Stamkos is, if you look at the Lightning's history, their core players, they have always taken care of them a year out. Kucherov a year out, Vasilevsky a year out, Hedman a year out, Point a year out. They said today that Hedman, who has another year left in his contract, may be signing an extension as soon as Monday. They have never taken care of Stamkos in advance. He is a really friendly, polite, first-class guy. But even people like that reach a point, and I'm wondering if he's finally hit it. Remember last time he got within 3 days of free agency? He got within 3 days of free agency and took the deal.
That's right.
We'll see if he changes this time.
That was Elliot on the Pat McAfee Show saying, I think Steven Stamkos is hitting the market, as his agent told Pierre earlier today. So, Ian, I believe that free agency opens up during the midday show on Monday, if I'm not mistaken.
I believe, is it 11 a.m. Central or 1 p.m. Central? Something around there.
Which means that the Predators may have already made some signings by the time we pop on the air on Monday. So here is the Jared Stillman Predators free agency big board. These are the guys I want that I think, you know, are feasible to make sense into some kind of budget some way or another. 10 guys I'm keeping my eye on. We start at the top.
Number one.
Sam Reinhart of the Florida Panthers. Now, nobody's talking about him, because he's probably going to re-sign in Tampa, but he's a 50-goal scorer, and he's got a history with Andrew Burnett. I love Sam Reinhart. I love his game. I think he's a great player. I think he'd be a great Predator. Sign me up for Sam Reinhart if he gets to free agency, but you're probably looking at about 7 years and $10 million a pop, so be careful.
Number two.
Steven Stamkos of the Tampa Bay Lightning. He is a serial winner. He would help your power play, which was awful in that series against Vancouver. He scored 40 goals last year. He's still relatively youngish at 33 years old. I mean, young's probably not the right word. He's not an old pawpaw like the two guys we saw last night debating. He can still play some hockey. And so I look at Steven Stamkos, and I think this is exactly what the Predators need. And I do think the Predators are going to sign him. I've got him for 4 years at $825 million. As a Nashville Predator on Monday.
Number three.
So I went with Brent Pesce ahead of Brady Shea at the Carolina Hurricanes, because I think Brent Pesce is more of a defensive defenseman than Brady Shea, who I think is probably a solid defensive defenseman, but maybe a little bit more offensive-minded than Brent Pesce. And I think that Brent Pesce will be significantly cheaper than Brady Shea, who you're probably looking at 5 years, $6.5 million in order to sign. Maybe 6 years at $6 million, which is a lot of money for a defenseman, but he would pair nicely with Yossi. Brent Pesce, I think, again, when I think of Yossi and how much he goes up and down the ice, and I'm looking for a guy to pair with him or to have on that second pair, I kind of want more of an at-home defensive defenseman, and I would rather have Pesce than Shea, and I would put Pesce on my penalty kill. And so I am a Brent Pesce fan. He's number three on the big board.
Number four.
Brady Shea. Also, with the Carolina Hurricanes, Brady Shea's a better player. Brady Shea would cost more money, and I don't know if Shea would be as good of a fit on the penalty kill and next to Yossi as Pesci would, but I do think that they could use Shea maybe in Andrew Burnett's system a little bit better. So, to me, you're picking hairs. I'll take the cheaper guy, Pesci, but Shea's number four.
Number five.
Jonathan Marchessault. If you cannot get Sam Reinhart, you cannot get Steven Stamkos. He is the third best scoring winger that is out there. I am not interested in Jake Guentzel. He's going to be too much money. Right now, he's 8x8 with Carolina. That offer's on the table. I think Guentzel stays at Carolina. So I go with Marchessault at five. Between Tampa and Vegas, these two teams have such little cap space that I'm not sure they can keep these two guys, which means they're going to get out there. Marchessault is a consistent top two line player. And if you get Chandler Stephenson, who everybody seems to think is a natural fit for Barry Trotz, Marchessault and Stephenson together does make sense to be on your second line because of the chemistry that they probably have from Vegas.
Number six.
Sean Walker, the defenseman the Colorado Avalanche acquired at the deadline from Philadelphia. He is a solid defenseman who will not break the bank. And again, losing Ryan McDonagh, the Predators need solid top four defensemen. He's one of them. I think you're looking at a four-year deal at probably about $4.5 million a year. Not the end of the world for him.
Number seven.
Oliver Ekman-Larsson of the Florida Panthers. Ian, what happened to him?
I think he's just always been overrated.
I mean, he was in Arizona. They paid him a fortune. They bought him out. And now all of a sudden, he ends up with the Florida Panthers, and he's on a cup winner. And I thought he actually played okay. And again, I'm not going to break the bank for Ekman-Larsson. Ian's right. He probably is a little overrated. But again, what I want to do is I'll pay one guy, you know, one guy, big money. And then I want to develop another guy, which is Mullendijk. Everybody else that's in my top four on defense, I don't want to pay big money to, and I don't want to bank on a young guy. I've already got Lazan, who under Andrew Burnett actually looks like an NHL player. If I can't get any of the other guys, Ekman-Larsson, he's a top four defenseman and would be one of your best four. He would be a solid addition.
Number eight.
Chandler Stephenson in Vegas. I had never heard of him until everybody told me that he played for Barry Trotz and won a cup. And he's won cups in Vegas, and he's a second-line center. I'll take your word on it. He's number eight.
Number nine.
Warren Fogle of the Edmonton Oilers. I love this guy's game. He is such a good two-way player. He is a great penalty killer. He is just a freaking jitterbug out there. I am a Warren Fogle fan. And I just think that he may be a guy that you don't jump out right away to sign, but who wait a little bit of time. He might be out there, kind of that winner Barry Trotz is looking for, kind of that veteran, that younger guys, especially those young, you know, sandpaper guys like LaRue maybe could look up to. I like Warren Fogle at number nine in case, you know, you got a little extra cash to spend.
Number 10.
Scott Wedgwood, the backup goalie in Dallas. He's a free agent. Give him $1 million. Somebody's got to replace Kevin Lankinen. What I think the Predators are going to do, if they keep Yaroslav Askarov and they don't trade in the top five, is I think that they'll have Saros as the starter, and when it's time to give Saros a break, Askarov will come up from Milwaukee, play the game, and go back down, which means that you have to have somebody that on a long road trip can be a starter, or if something happens to Saros, can be your starting goalie or be your backup to Askarov if he comes up to be your everyday starter if something happens to Saros. Wedgwood at about $1 million, I think, is probably a nice fit. That's the kind of backup goalie they're looking for. They're not going to pay the money for a Cam Talbot or, you know, more of a higher-end backup. So I think Scott Wedgwood would kind of be more of your David Riddick-type goalie. That's it for us. We are out of here, Stillman and Company. Everybody, we will see you all Monday at 2. Max has the draft show. That's next, live from Ford Ice Center Bellevue. Stillman and Company, see you Monday at 2.